I'm Lisanne Flynn. I'm a master healer who works with all earthlings to reunite them within themselves and with each other, regardless of the dimension they're currently in. Meaning, I'm a medium as well as an animal communicator, medical intuitive, and channel for all beings. I use the tools of shamanic journeying and soul retrieval to support animals and humans as they heal from past trauma. I'm certified as a Reiki master teacher and as a canine massage therapist. This is the Animal's Eye View podcast. I thought that I might use a little bit of a pun in animals seeing spirits know they've not been drinking, as in animals have not been drinking spirits. Maybe that's just me. And this is something that kind of came across my radar, as things often do for me, as I'm sure for you as well. I think it was maybe something that I might have seen on Facebook or something like that, that it was, wow, you know, do animals see spirits? And whatever it was that I was reading and looking at went into this discussion of how freaked out humans get when we see our favorite animal companion kind of staring off into a corner, up in a corner usually, sometimes in a doorway. And I think especially so if we see signs of stress. If we see the hackles go up, if we hear a growl, if we see the arching of our favorite feline companion's back and the tail suddenly gets really poofy and they do that funny little kind of sideways Snoopy dance, that doesn't necessarily mean they're in a happy place like Snoopy usually is. And I think maybe we have this perception that they're like, I don't know, paranormal indicators of something that's in our physical space. And again, something that usually from a human perspective, we need to be fearful of. The whole dual role of predator and prey. And in that case, the prey aspect of that dual role getting activated. And I think when we look at something like this, it's really important to look at our human-centric belief systems, because keep in mind, and as I've often talked about in the podcast, that animals don't have belief systems. They don't have religion. They don't have science. They don't have a lot of even beliefs about who's conscious and who's not on the planet that beings in human experience tend to have. And I think life after death is certainly a belief system that we could all probably say that we as beings in human experience have. And maybe it falls into one of two categories. Either there is life after death or there isn't life after death. You know, we often say, after someone transitions, oh, may they rest in peace. As if this life is the only one that there is. And I guess I would invite you at this point to reach into your own physical experience of energy. Because as I was talking to a client actually just this morning, and talking about, even though we have life forms on this planet amongst our species where they're pretty much anatomically the same. We have a skeletal structure. We have an overlaying of muscles. We have a nervous system. We have the circulatory system. We have the cardiorespiratory system. And at the same time, we also recognize that as beings in human experience, each one of us has a separate individual life form, physical form, a body that's separate. And underneath that, though, of that individuality, and that's where our framework of consciousness tends to go towards the individual first and then the collective second, as I've talked about before, it's actually this underlying structural similarity, which is kind of the conduit for energy kind of across the planet, that we're able to, if we choose, tap into and actually come up with an outcome, I guess we could say, that is very similar, if not identical, to the person standing or sitting next to you who, on the surface level, via color of skin, the way their facial features are structured, by the way they happen to have a certain body type, how tall they are, is going to be pretty much the same. And so we also have this kind of conversely attachment to the physical body, to where once the physical body ceases to exist, that everything else kind of ceases to exist as well, which is a really interesting, I don't know if the right word is counterintuitive point to the fact that if we were to connect through our own individual experiences, we would actually come up with something that is pretty much the same. We also have another belief system that says whoever doesn't have physical form and who also appears to us and to our animals, we tend to call them ghosts or spirits or etc. I like to use the all-encompassing entity descriptor. And for the purposes of today, we'll stick with spirits so as to narrow down the individual energy fingerprints, if you will, of those who once had physical form on the planet, because that's what I want to address about whether or not animals can see spirits. And I think, generally speaking, you may agree with me that by spirits meaning a being that once was alive and in physical form and now is outside and has had, as Chief Seattle put it so well, a change of worlds. I like using entities because to me, that is a broader umbrella under which we can kind of put all sorts of different energetic, if you will, fingerprints again, that may or may not be entities who have had physical form before, i.e. beings in either human or animal experience that were once here on the planet. It could be galactic beings who've never had physical form on this planet. It could be angelic beings that have never had physical form on this planet. And to a certain extent, at least in my line of work, it really helps me to have a broader umbrella so that I don't have any preconceived notions or perhaps any belief systems coming in that saying, oh yeah, that's definitely, I don't know, a poltergeist, a ghost, an individual upon whose graveyard you happen to move into a house that had been built on top of that graveyard. I just prefer using the category of entity. And when I was doing a little bit of research about this, kind of into, you know, does life after death exist? In fact, there have been scientific studies, of which I will put a link into the podcast notes, about the cells of the body not dying immediately as opposed to the brain cells, which is really interesting. And of course, is from the being and human experience perspective, we have elevated the brain, right? Because, of course, the brain is the thing we perceive that sets us apart from all other species on the planet. And so we often refer to, oh, well, there's been brain death, or an individual who happens to be in a coma doesn't have any EEG electrical brainwave activity, and so they are considered to be brain dead. And, of course, if anyone knows of someone who has been taken off of what they call other life support mechanisms, that sometimes the body continues to have the heartbeat and to breathe all on its own. Sometimes that takes a while to cease. The heart is not only a pump, it's also on a separate electrical system from the brain. And I'll definitely have to do a podcast on that at some point in time, because that's also just really, at least to me, pretty fascinating and kind of magical stuff. And so in this particular study that I'll put the link to in the podcast notes, they were researching the phenomenon of individuals having, again, the same sort of experience after, for instance, a heart attack, a cardiac arrest, that they were then resuscitated using CPR. And those that were able to recall their experiences while they were, quote unquote, technically deceased, have a remarkable shared commonality amongst them. And I've mentioned before, I think Dolores Cannon's work is particularly illuminating of this, as well as Michael Newton, Journey of Souls. His was really the first book that I read about studying, does life after death exist? And to me, this then puts a consciousness, if you will, and I would rather use the term awareness. Consciousness to me puts it right up there in the brain, at least for beings in human experience. And again, I'd rather stay away from that, mostly because we prize it so much. It's not a brain-only process. It's a whole body process. And I think it definitely is human-centric, i.e. egocentric, to have it be such an emphasis on the brain, as I just said, because that also tends to separate us from all the other species, and we tend to perceive ourselves, of course, to be bigger than that and somehow greater than that. And I think as well, our perspective is locked into this third dimension because we chose for it to be that way, so that we could separate out from all the other beings on the planet, the whole predator-prey thing. Does that mean that other dimensions don't exist and don't interact with ours all of the time? Of course not. It's interesting, though, that the first thing our brains turn to when we see an animal stare off into space is what we think is an empty space, or perhaps vocalize or behave in a certain way, growl, that something is, air quotes, wrong. And I think there are a number of reasons why they might stare off into space that just frankly doesn't have anything to do with ghosts or spirits or other entities being present. I refer to those moments as spiritual drive-bys. And sometimes that happens when an animal is in a moment of transition, just the same as a human does. You may have heard stories or even witnessed it yourself of a being in human experience who is getting ready to transition and who is maybe very well, I would use the term advisedly, actively transitioning, that they may perceive that their parents or their siblings or another loved one who has already transitioned is very alive and present with them in the same room. They may even talk to them. And for us, we look at that and we say, oh, they're imagining things and they might be having hallucinations. That's another term that we like to throw out there in an attempt to explain, I guess, in a non-threatening way to ourselves, that this sort of world between worlds and even connecting of worlds doesn't exist because, again, it freaks us out. It makes us feel uncomfortable. It makes us feel, for whatever reason, less sturdy and less grounded in our own physical experience. There are also other spiritual drive-bys that sometimes animals do after their own transition. I have had many a guardian, including myself, see a flash of fur from out of the corner of my eye. I might have felt, and others have felt, a leap onto the bed that is just really sensory familiar of how a beloved animal companion would jump up onto our bed. I've had people say, you know, I felt their nose right in my hand, like how they would always do, that cold nose. I've had other people say, I could have sworn that I heard the jangle of their collars and things like that. That's just their way of letting you know energetically that they're always present for you, and even more so, gives you very distinct, locked in third dimensional validation that energy is present everywhere. And that's what this is about, of course, right? The master language of energy that we've talked about so many times before. The ability of animals to be ever present in all of the dimensions that are available to them. And frankly, to us, we use human language to describe things that to us are either indescribable, or so we think, or that we want to take apart, figure out how they work, and deconstruct in a way so that we humans can somehow gain mastery of such magical and mystical places. And it's so interesting to me because animals do none of that. They simply interact one-on-one and collectively with all of these other dimensions, and it becomes their operating system. That is their norm. There isn't really anything that they set outside of themselves because they're in all places all at once. That's how this works. And frankly, along the lines of quantum physics and string theory, that's where animals exist, where everything is connected. And because when animals interact with any kind of energetic vibration, there's a whole host of responses that take place. Indeed, there very well could be, as I have worked with many a client in the past, an entity who somehow has formed an attachment to a physical location. There could very well be an entity upon whose graveyard a physical dwelling has been placed, and for whatever reason, that entity has chosen to remain attached to this particular dwelling or this particular piece of land. And it's definitely not that they haven't, quote unquote, transitioned, as in having their soul or their spirit, divine spark, whatever it is you want to call it, leave physical form and transition on to another place. It's like they have decided to have just a big toe remain here in this particular dimension. And it's usually because they're bothered. It's usually because they have difficulty accepting something that either took place or didn't take place. Again, usually in a physical dwelling and on a piece of land to which they had either had significant human experience or something significant happened to maybe their people, such as with native peoples and the graveyards upon which modern civilization was built. And so I do think, yes, the bottom line is animals can see, air quotes, spirits. I would invite you to talk with your animal companion when you think that some sort of a spirit interaction is going on. I would invite you to see, and this may feel like a bridge too far for some of you, I would invite you to see if you might be able to connect with whatever entity may very well be present. And because here's the thing, if you are noticing this about your animal companion, chances are good that A, this is on purpose on the entity's part, and B, they are attempting to make connection with you. I would invite you not to go to the place that this is a haunting of some sort. I would invite you to find your shadow or your shade work elsewhere, such as in reading any sort of horror novel or watching some sort of a slasher movie or whatever happens to be your particular shade or shadow jam, and not put onto, not cast aspersions onto whatever particular entity may or may not be choosing to share themselves with you. Because just like animals in the wild, especially once we are out of this dimension of illusion of human experience, everything they do is on purpose. Everything. You're not going to have a spiritual drive-by of a just because of it. Oh, hey, just passing through. Don't mind me. I'll be out of your way in just a second. It may very well be that you have, just as I had with a client not very long ago, within the last month, an entity who makes their presence known in a very physical way, such as doors opening and closing, lights turning on and off, that sort of a thing, in an attempt to let you know that something is out of balance for them. And in that particular case, it was a woman whose last remaining relative had recently transitioned, and that ended the family's line of ownership with this particular house. And this woman, and interestingly enough, not the woman who had recently transitioned, but probably her grandmother, even great-grandmother, was just really not okay with this transition, because it meant then that someone else could come along and buy this house that actually had been built by her family in an area of a state where they actually might very well have been one of the very first families to build a house kind of out in the middle of a field. And so we worked with this individual, and we came up with a really lovely way to honor her and her family's legacy on the outside of the house, because I think it's important to still have our boundaries. And what was really great about this particular client is she said, "I'm not fearful. I just want them to be happy. I just want them to understand how much I want to help based on whatever it is we find out is the cause for all of this activity going on in the house where she, as being in current human experience, was living." It's that kind of openness, it's that kind of awareness that will move you out of being fearful and wondering if, ooh, spooky and scary, your animal companion is alerting you to the presence of another entity. Your body will actually tell you everything you have ever needed to know about any situation ever. And certainly in this situation, if you have an open heart to go along with an open perspective, there really isn't any reason to fear at all. At least that's how the animals would see it. Thanks for listening today. Leave a review if you're so inspired, and be sure to subscribe to this podcast. I offer all new clients a free 15-minute consultation. Reach out if you think I can be of service via www.lizanneflynn.com. Come and find me on social media, Facebook, Twitterverse, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I invite you to sign up for my quarterly newsletter on my website, where I also post notices for upcoming events such as new classes and online psychic fairs. I'm also going to be moving this podcast to an every other week basis. This has been the Animal's Eye View podcast. I'll see you next time.